Hi everyone, just a quick note before we get to today's podcast. If you could please take 1 minute out of your day to rate and review the podcast, and of course, please subscribe, it would mean a lot. As always, we really appreciate the ongoing support from all of you and the great feedback we are getting. I hope you guys enjoy today's podcast. Cheers. It is a beautiful Monday morning.
Absolutely sensational.
I like him. He's aggressive. He gets in there.
But I do have one more point about Liverpool, though.
Honestly.
Absolutely stunningly beautiful.
Plazenac. Oh, geez.
An absolute beautiful goal.
Welcome to the Trademate Sports Podcast. Hello all, welcome to the Trademate Sports Betting Podcast. Today I'm joined by another great mind in the world of betting, Nanko from the Church of Betting blog, mate. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi Alex, and thanks for having me.
No worries, mate. Pleasure to have you on. And for those who don't know too much about the Church of Betting blog, it's one of the best betting blogs out there. I highly recommend going to Nanko's blog and giving it a read. But I thought the best way we could go about today's podcast or conversation is we could split into two parts. So the first half, we're going to talk about some of the articles you've written. And the second half, I wanted to talk through some of the answers you've given on the hugely popular, of course, Betting Experts article series that we've got on the Trademate Sports blog at the moment, because I think some of your answers within that have been really interesting. And I think in some cases, they've been not overly, but slightly contrary to some of the answers from the other experts. So I'm really looking forward to getting into that in the second half of the podcast. But mate, firstly, it would be really cool if you could just explain a bit about Church of Betting and your personal journey into the betting industry.
Yeah, sure thing. So thanks for the introduction. And most people probably know me from the Church of Betting blog, where I post an article every now and then on different betting-related topics. Basically, for me, it all started with arbitrage betting. So many years ago, I obviously placed some casual bets here and there on football games, on the popular leagues, games that I watched and so on. I never really took it seriously before I just randomly met a guy who told me a bit about arbitrage betting. And I think some people refer to it as match betting as well. And I kind of really liked the concept. It sounded interesting. I mean, I was a student at the time, so you get a kind of a small extra income. I kind of understood the basics and the concept. It appeared to me to make sense. So I thought, okay, why not? I'll give it a try. And this was my first encounter with, I don't know if you could call it sharp sports betting. I mean, arbitrage is in itself not rocket science, of course, but it's still a first step to see and to learn that you can earn money with this kind of thing. So I was doing this for a couple of years, and I started reading blogs and joined the online communities, and just at some point encountered some other interesting topics in the betting domain and some other ways to make money betting. Of course, at some point, technical value betting became a bit more popular. I mean, this is what you also do at Trademate Sports, and it is strongly connected to arbitrage, so the concept is easy to get for someone who is doing arbitrage. It improves your returns somewhat, increases the risk as well, of course, but still I think it would also be something that I could do, and I was doing this as well. And at some point I started developing rating models for different sports and trying to come up with my own odds. Actually, this is what takes most of my time at the moment. I mean, I do some value betting every now and then. Of course, now with the current situation with the virus, a bit less than I used to, but I'll probably soon now come back to speed. But basically, what I mostly do now in the betting domain is building rating models and calculating odds for certain sports.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. That was one of the questions I wanted to ask you, was about rating models, because I did see you had an article on that, and I was going to ask if you've built one yourself, but obviously you have. And is it something that you think is worth people's time nowadays? Because I assume it is very time consuming. And it depends how big the model is. But it can be quite time consuming, I consume, kind of doing it on a weekly basis.
Mm. Yeah, for sure. It's very time consuming, for sure. But I think it's worth it. And I've written one article on Reading Mollus, I don't know, maybe already a year ago, I'm not sure. And I said it there as well. It takes a lot of time and it's very difficult, but it's worth it because you learn a lot. I mean, for me, it has been a great learning experience. It takes some programming, it takes some understanding of statistics, some understanding of the sport that you're trying to model. And you just acquire a lot of skills that are useful in many domains in life, not just in betting. So it really, if it's worth it, I don't know, it really depends on your priorities and what you're looking for. Of course, if your goal is to make some money as easily, as quickly as possible, I'd say do arbitrage or do value betting, depending on what your risk appetite is. I mean, these are things that are easy to learn. You can start them quickly and you can start earning some money. With trying to handicap games in certain sports, like I'm doing esports and League of Legends in particular, you can do anything you like. It takes really a lot of time. It's extremely difficult to get to the level where you're at zero, where you don't have any expected value, but probably you see something that the bookmaker doesn't see. The bookmaker sees a lot that you don't see, but when you place the bet, you at least manage to cover the margin. I mean, at least until you can get at least there, you still need to invest a ton of effort, but you learn a lot. It's a very steep learning curve, and you can apply it in a lot of domains. And really, at some point, when it starts working, it's where it really starts to pay off. And it has been a great experience for me, and I don't plan on stopping this project anytime soon.
Was it a tough process going from building a rating model and getting all the statistical kind of stuff involved to come up with a rating for a team and then converting that to see if there's any kind of value there and, you know, weekly, monthly odds on betting games or whatever? Was that quite a difficult process to see if there's, I mean, you might like a team to win, but if the value is not there, it's not worth your time.
Well, basically, translating the result, I mean, the output of your model to odds and finding value, it's not hard. I mean, you just compare your number with the bookmaker's number and you think you've identified value. The real question is if you really did or if you're missing something. Like in 99% of the cases, you'd simply be missing something. I mean, I can come up with a number for a game right now as we are speaking based on my intuition or something and then have a look at Pinnacle, see that they have a different number and say, hey, I found value. I can bet that. But of course, I didn't go through the whole process to account for all the factors. And so, really, the difficult part is to get good odds. I mean, to be able to really to make good predictions, to make as accurate predictions as possible. This is really the hardest part of it. Of course, also acquiring data that you can base your analysis on is also very difficult. There's a lot of free data out there on the web by, you know, nice people who just love the sport and like to share what they have collected, the data they have collected. But it's sometimes also the data has quality problems that you must take care of. You must see really what you're taking as an input. You must analyze it thoroughly and see if your data is good. And then you must do a very accurate predictions. There are a lot of ways to do that. You can try to minimize the error of your predictions historically to see how your model would have performed historically and how close would your predictions be to reality. But at the end of the day, it really comes down to making accurate predictions, to having a good model that makes exact predictions. Then once you have that, you just need to go to the bookmaker, see where you get the best odds, and just place your bet. I mean, this is probably the easier part, but still there. I mean, it's really an end-to-end process. Even there are a lot of things that you can do right or wrong. The bet placement is a kind of a trivial thing, but of course it pays off to always search for the best odds available on the market, to track your holding line value and so on. So,
yeah, and then what is the rating model actually of? Is it a particular league, a particular sport?
Well, in my case, it's a sport. It's an e-sport, a League of Legends, as I said, but you can do anything you like. I guess most people just focus on certain sports and apply a model to all of the leagues, perhaps for different leagues, so certain factors will change. But most things are stay the same across leagues. I mean, if you're staying within the same sport, so you just build a model for a sport.
Yeah, because I did see on your blog that you've been doing a lot of esports betting over your time, and especially during these times, it's probably, I mean, it has become quite popular over the last couple of years, but I assume even more so during the whole coronavirus pandemic. How has your esports been going, and have you been using, what kind of metrics have you been using with your ratings model to see if you're finding value?
Well, I have been using data that's freely available on the internet, so I'm not. I don't have some high-tech scraping algorithms or anything like that. But there's a lot of it, fortunately. I'm using data from the Oracle's Elixir website, which is really great. I recommend it to anyone who has interest in League of Legends, as well as some general stats from other websites. I guess I don't need to go into detail here. Yeah, we're just looking at the most common metrics that are looked at also by the League of Legends community in general, like gold leads, kills, deaths per, like which player is good, which champion, and so on. There are a lot of factors you could take into account. I mean, League of Legends isn't really the easiest sport to model because there are so many factors that are in play. You have two teams with five players each. Every player has a different role. Every player uses a different champion each game. Champions, you can think a bit like the tool with which the player is playing this game. It's like a tennis racket for a tennis player, or only this player is using a different tennis racket each game, and so on. I mean, there are a lot of factors in play, so it's kind of difficult to mold. But on the other hand, there is a lot of data out there that's available, so you can at the end you could probably make it work.
Yeah. But in terms of measuring your value, are you using closing lines still?
Yeah, I do. Of course, it's a bit difficult because, as I said, currently I'm not doing any scraping, so I'm trying to track it manually as far as possible. But of course, I don't get it entirely accurately. I mean, I cannot be on my computer every time that a game starts, and I play a lot of games. So I do my best to track it. It's not entirely accurate, but I still get certain information out of it, which is enough for me at this point. Of course, if I do it more professionally, I must find a way to track it more accurately. But it's still very strong in indicator, and I try to track it as good as I can.
Is there a particular closing line that you like to follow?
I place most of my bets in Pinnacle, so I track it against Pinnacle. Yeah. But sometimes I cannot track it against Pinnacle because the game has ended, so I check what the price was at closing of the other books. Which, again, it's not optimal, but it's one way to do it.
Okay, yeah. And what do you think about the market, the esports market? Do you think it's efficient, or, I mean, is there anything that you think odds compilers or bettors also that are missing at the moment?
I think it's fairly efficient for sure, and which was surprising for me as well, because especially for certain leagues, we're talking really small limits, and you think the bookmakers just don't care, but actually they do care. They have, for most part, pretty accurate numbers, but you can find a crack here and there. I do think bookmakers or the market as in general are missing certain things. I do think there is, for example, normally more value on outsiders than favorites. This is what my analysis of previous have shown. And yeah, some other things, like if you go into prop markets, you can work a bit with the underlying distribution and see what the outcome looks like. For me, I found some discrepancies there as well. I think for the most part, they're fairly accurately priced, but you can, here and there, you can find some opportunities.
Yeah, one of the things I've noticed just in my own esports betting through TradeMate is that the price that I'm getting when I first bet on it is normally not drastically different, but it's a lot more liquid in terms of what it closes at compared to, you know, like a league like the EPL or any European football league. It does seem like it's quite a liquid market and the odds can change quite rapidly. Is that something you're cautious of?
Well, it works to my advantage, actually. I mean, there is clearly the reason for this is that even at the opening, of course, a game of League of Legends will have significantly lower limits than a game in the English Premier League, for example. This makes sense, of course, a lot less interest from the punters and so on. So if as a bookmaker you're offering lower limits, it's a lower, I mean, this less important revenue source for you. So you will not invest that much in resources into having the most accurate odds. And therefore, sometimes you'll be pretty far off from the actual number, which would mean that that the odds are going to change a lot more for this part in compared to others where your trader actually came up with a lot more accurate numbers for this game. So I think this is really an advantage for the punter. And I'm contradicting myself a bit. I just said that most games are priced fairly well, but with this I mean that there's some random guy who watched a few League of Legends games cannot go and beat the bookmaker. But I think that it is easier compared to those larger leagues for sure.
Yeah, okay, that's very interesting. And then moving on, mate, you also did some other research into the trends of betting in 2019. Some of the biggest trends you found were arbing to value betting, esports, USD regulation, big data sports analytics, and automation. I know we're only halfway through 2020 and it's been quite a crazy year so far. Is there any trends you've picked up on or any of those trends continuing?
I was actually considering writing the same article for 2020 and didn't get to it so far because I kind
of got a bit of time left, mate.
That's true. Maybe I can start thinking about 2021. No, but I think just the trends haven't changed that much. And since I don't want to repeat myself, maybe I'll really wait for 2021. You still have. Value betting is still there and popular as long as you can do it, of course, with the current situation. But sports is slowly picking back. It's there. Data analysis, as important as ever. You can see that all those, you see a lot of trending terms in the betting community, like machine learning and artificial intelligence and whatnot. And, I don't think that those techniques will make a real revolution in betting because I think people were making smart betting models even before the term big data as a term become trendy. And so I don't think it will be such a drastic change, but certainly the overall direction is that everyone's paying more attention to data. More data is becoming available, better quality data, and so on. So this is also there. The crypto boom settled a bit. You have a lot of offshore bookmakers that are dealing in Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies in general, which is kind of a convenience for the better. You have faster transactions. You have some anonymity, of course. But we're not there yet where you can settle bets according to blockchain and have a kind of third-party settlement, not settlement done by the bookmaker. There was a lot of talk that maybe this will come at some point. Not there yet. I think all those trends are there. It's all still a slow process. U.S. deregulation. You have really large market in the U.S. right now, so it's interesting how this is going to develop as well. Basically the same trends, I'd say.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. And then lastly, Matt, I just wanted to go through one more article and about backing the draw in close games. And I think you did an article in 2017 about this, and then you've done a new article recently. What were some of the key findings in whether you think, backing the draw is still profitable in close games?
Indeed. It was just one specific strategy which I wanted to reevaluate because I've already written once about it and it's kind of popular. There's a book written about it or around this concept, and a lot of betting blogs on the internet are also following it. So I thought, why not? There seems to be some interest there. Yeah, the key findings, I discovered that the strategy has no closing line value, which might mean that there is no value in the strategy, or it might mean that it's not just not captured by the closing line. But it is what it is. And then I also looked at different leagues, how the strategy has developed in the recent years. Basically, the strategy has been historically profitable for the Premier League and the Spanish La Liga. And the profit seems to have decreased a little bit for the Premier League. I mean, it's just basically been flat for the last 3 years. And you still have some profit for La Liga in Spain. On the other hand, you don't have any closing line value. And I also look at other leagues and see that you often find the same results with a negative sign, which also makes me think that this might be just be a random process. I mean, you have certain strategies performing better in some leagues and worse in other leagues. But is this due to some underlying factors or is it just randomness? I mean, it's hard to tell. But this is something that you must ask yourself as a punter, I think. And now you can never make an exact. You can never know for sure if there is a trend or if there is not. I think the null hypothesis must always be that there is no trend, because most of the time those things are just random noise. And this is what I've done. But of course, there are people who are looking into it in more detail and see which teams or which situations are offering higher returns. I have offered higher returns in the past than others. And you can, for example, go to Cassini's blog, Green All Over. Great blog, by the way. I really recommend it. And he's looking in more detail into which are the most profitable selections from this strategy. I mean, if this is something that you'd like to pursue, there are really two ways to look at it. But at this point, I'm rather skeptical, but I might be wrong.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll see what happens over time, mate. And I look forward to the next article on it. mate, I want to move on now to your answers from the Betting Expert series, as I said at the start. Let's just kick things off with one that hasn't come out yet, which will be released as an article later this year. And the question was, is there a best sport to bet on? And you wrote, I'll quote exactly what you said, which was, there are, of course, sports that are easier than others to model, and those where it is very hard to differentiate a player's skill from chance. Can you explain what kind of sports they would be?
Yeah, well, there are two aspects here. As you said, first, you'd always, as a beginner, you'd always prefer the smaller sports, the sports that attract less interest, because this is a smaller market, less money, it's less efficient, it's easier to find value there. Yeah, I mean, it's quite straightforward, really. But then it's really the case that some sports are easier to model than others. And for me, for example, team sports are harder to model than one player, the single player sports, because having a team adds a layer of complexity. You don't only have the single players of a team, but also their interaction. I mean, how good they're playing as a team. It's just one or a few more things that you have to consider when you're trying to estimate the strength of this team. Really, the question is how many factors are in play there. I mean, how many different situations you can have in a game. What can you track? What you cannot track? For me, for example, as I said, single player sports are easier to model, and I would really love to do some work on, for example, tennis. I think it's a great sport for modeling. I mean, Elo ratings were originally developed for chess, and chess is probably great for that as well. But on the other hand, the markets are probably smaller. I haven't looked at that. But yeah, for basically when you pick a sport to model, I think the two most important factors are, first, I mean, isn't the sport too big for you? I mean, yeah. You should try the size of market size that you can beat with your current capabilities. I mean, this can also be a popular sport, but it's a small market in it. Some kind of prop market, like you can do some kind of yards in American football and so on, that you can still get an advantage on, because the bookmaker is not paying that much attention there. And the other question is easy to model, and can you model it? I mean, do you understand the underlying process? And if you do, and if you're capable and know how to do it, you can do it.
Yeah, no, the first thing that came to mind when you said it's a lot easier to model, or it's a lot more predictable if it's an individual sport, I thought of, you know, tennis, or just like an ATP tournament, one of the lower, not like a Grand Slam or anything like that. But yeah, that might be a good starting point for people, because I thought you might have been referring to when you said it's very hard to differentiate a player's skill from chance. The first thing that came to my mind was something like MMA or UFC, as most people like to refer to it, is that there's just such a high variance in results. They're not really based on their skill, but it's more so just based on small gloves and the ability to knock someone out very, very easily. So I assume that a sport, even though it is an individual sport, something like the MMA, UFC, would be quite hard to model.
Yeah, you have a point. I mean, I think in fighting sports in particular, there's also a lot of psychology at play. Yeah. By the way, I've also not noticed in some esports, I mean, more than a dynamic esports, because like Counter-Strike, I mean, the league is kind of slow in comparison. Then there often you have the situation where one team is really snowballing. I mean, they win a few games in a row, that they have the economy on their side, but also a certain psychological advantage. And you also normally they have really long growths of only one team winning games before the other can come back on track. And I think you have also something similar in fighting sport. Because, I think you're right. There is a lot of randomness there for sure.
And then your next one I wanted to go through was the article where we looked at finding value. And this is another quote you ripped out for us, which was the strongest indicator of good betting results being caused by skill as opposed to luck is, of course, the closing line value. There have been tipsters with very long track records and positive ROI, which could hardly be attributed to chance, and still no closing line value. I found this really interesting, and I'd love to know if you had any idea of the kind of sample size that you're talking with these tipsters, in terms of ones that are not beating the closing line but are still very profitable, as you say, with a long track record.
Mm. Yeah, well, an interesting case, and one about which I have talked on in my article on closing line value, was Nishikori, a guy going by the nickname Nishikori, who is a tipster on the Pikyo platform, I believe, for tennis. And he has many thousands of bets with an average ROI of 7-8%, and his CLV is basically flat. I mean, which means he has enough CLV to cover the margin. I mean, this must be said as well. This is, the line goes in his direction a little bit, but just enough to cover the margin, which strictly seen you would not define as a positive CLV. And the track, he has a huge track record. I mean, many thousands of bets. So only by this example, you can see that this is not a one-way street. I mean, of course, CLV is closing line value is a very strong indicator, but it's also a very conservative one. It doesn't tell you the whole story. And it's possible that you don't have closing line value, but you still have some value. I mean, if you have closing line value, then you have value for sure.
Yeah, I think it probably depends what market he's betting in.
Okay, yeah, for sure. Yeah. If you're the only one betting on the market, I have it as well. Some really small League of Legends market that is probably just me and 2-3 more guys that are betting it. Then I place a max bet and nobody looks at it anymore until the game starts. And then I look at it, oh, I have a great closing line value. Of course, this doesn't tell you much as well. But this is a very specific case. If you're betting a larger market, I would say if you have a closing line better, then you have value for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen this guy as a result. I think he's a sample size of 3,000, something around 3,000 bets at this point. And it's very interesting that he's got barely any closing line value, or basically nothing, and that he's still producing those kind of results. And I'd love to quote our CEO Marius, or sometimes he's on the podcast too. And his theory with tipsters is that if you have thousands and thousands, let's just say 10,000 tipsters, and they've got no idea what they're doing, and they just keep picking and picking games, you're going to get at least one person that's going to have a really, really good track record. but even if they're not beating the closing line. But I mean, it's an interesting theory. It kind of makes sense, but it would just be very, because even though 3,000 bets is quite a big sample size, it's still not huge, I would say. Like, it would be interesting to see how someone like him would go after 6,000 bets or after 10,000 bets.
Yeah, that's true as well. I mean, 3,000 is not that much, and it could be possible that it's your chance. I mean, it's always possible. The question is how big the possibility is. At some point, the possibility is so small that you can discard it, but definitely not with 3,000 bets. That's true.
Yeah. And then moving on, mate, this is another one that I think is coming out later in the series, and it's to do with the role emotions play in sports betting. And I find this really interesting. So you said, don't watch games just to find out the outcome of your bet the moment it happens. This doesn't bring you any benefit as a punter and can be a huge time waste. Of course, if you like watching the sport anyway, or you do it to learn something, it is a different story. Same applies to refreshing the live score every few seconds while you must be doing something else at the time. It is very stupid, but we have all done it. It is best to avoid that. And it's so true, mate, because if you're a value bettor, let's just say, you really shouldn't be looking at the result of a game. It is relevant. The only thing you should be looking at is whether you beat the closing line, or maybe there's some other metric you like to look at. Can you kind of go into that further about kind of maybe the psychology behind it?
Yeah. You gave a great example. It's kind of a radical example, because in technical value betting, really, you know the process behind your decision. It has nothing to do with the sport. You don't know the sport. You have no clue. So it really gives you no advantage to watch the game in this case. If you're trying to, I mean, okay, so pretty often I watch games of League of Legends, because it helps me understand the game a bit better and to gain some new ideas. But if you have a more technical and less fundamental approach, then probably that brings you no advantage. But I mean, it's obvious. As I said, everyone has done it. It's common knowledge. You shouldn't do it. You shouldn't sweat your games. Everyone does it. So there's not much to say there. I mean, it often makes no sense, but we tend to do it because we have a stake in the game, and we just want to be the first to learn what the outcome is, even though that doesn't give you any advantage. But on the other hand, I don't know. I mean, if you enjoy the sport, there is nothing wrong to it is not wrong to watch it. I mean, the fact that you place the bet doesn't mean you need to turn off the TV and just watch the other way. I mean, if you like the sport, if you enjoy watching it in general, not just because you place the bet on it, it's okay. And I mean, placing a bet on it often makes it more interesting for the person. It is what it is, really. It's part of how we see things. And this is actually also the reason why betting increases the interest in sports not for the smart punter, but for the general public, and which actually leads to betting being really something that supports sports in a way, and it's part of the whole environment, the whole infrastructure, so to say. I mean, if this was not the case, maybe people would not bet, and then everything that we do would make no sense, right? So I think we should be careful when we make such generalizations. I mean, if you make it for the profit and you try to optimize your approach and so on, yeah, sure. But in general, placing a bet on an event, it always makes it more interesting for you, and it will always be like that, I guess.
Yeah, it's very funny, because even myself, like whenever I'm betting on the weekend or during the week, the first thing I do the next morning or later that evening is I go and check whether the bet won or lost, and then after that I go and see if I beat the closing line. I'm no person to preach about this, but you always just have to keep reminding yourself, because it's not like, you know, maybe some people out there are just transitioning into like a value betting phase. They might have, you know, used to just do it for fun, or maybe they just had no idea about value betting. So instinctually, like, the first thing they want to look at is whether they won or lost. But I'm also I'm in this kind of the same boat, where I'm trying to train myself that, no, mate, you shouldn't be going looking at the result first. You should probably see if you found value, and if it closed out of your favor, then that's when you should maybe be a bit upset. So
there's also so much variance in the process that you can go crazy. I mean, it happens all the time in betting that you, I don't know, you lose 5 games, 10 games, 15 games in a row, and you're really a lot in the red, and that can really stress you out if you don't have the right approach to it. So
yeah, it's a even though you shouldn't be looking at your results on a day-to-day basis, it kind of is like a day-to-day talking to yourself kind of thing. Because I'm going through a pretty similar stretch at the moment with my betting. And like, I had a really bad drop in my results. I think it was in March, just before coronavirus. Mm. And then ever since then, I've just plateaued. Like, everything's just, I'm not profiting, yeah. I'm not losing. And it can become really frustrating over a while. And, you know, you just have to wait for that good run, basically.
Yeah, yeah. Indeed,
If you're finding value, that is. And then lastly, mate, I just wanted to go through, we talked a little bit about this in terms of market efficiency, but you said something really interesting. You said compared to years ago, you don't think the market is that efficient. So I think we asked the question, how efficient do you think betting markets are? And you basically said, if you asked me this question 3 years ago, however long ago, I would have said it's very, very efficient. But nowadays, you don't think it's that efficient. Can you explain that?
Yeah, and just to clarify, because this sounds a bit confusing, I do not think that the market today is less efficient than it was a few years ago. It's certainly more efficient, for sure. I just talk about my understanding, my opinion on the question. This is the only thing that has changed in this direction. I mean, for sure, the market is getting more efficient every year, the betting market, the financial market. It's really this data revolution that we're talking about. I mean, the efficient market hypothesis is very respected nowadays, as it has always been since it has been first published. And it says that markets are based on information. And information is getting more and it's moving faster. It's getting, you get information of better quality and so on. So definitely, markets are getting more efficient by the day, all of them. But the question is how efficient really they are they, and how efficient were they to start with? And I don't know. I have friends who are working in the financial industry, and I have talked about this with them as well. And when I say to them, "Hey, I know about efficient market hypothesis, and markets are super efficient," and they're laughing, and they say, "Why are you laughing?" And they say, "Okay, I'm in this business since 10 years, and I know that, you know, there are a lot of inefficiencies in the market. You just need to have some experience, be in the industry, and then you know it, and you know." Some guys will probably not believe in this, or say that these financial guys are really not being honest here, because their funds are underperforming the average low cost ETF and so on. But this is also not necessarily the case. I mean, they're underperforming after fees, but before fees, often the fund managers are getting a few percent of alpha. And I'm talking about financial world here. And if those guys manage to find some inefficiencies in the financial world, and from what I understand, they're not some kind of, you know, big data gurus that are going through millions of data points to discover this value, but that they just understand the market and the sentiment of the market participants a little bit better, and they manage to track certain trends and to see where it is all going based on their experience in the field. And I just think if you can do it in the financial world and the financial markets that are so huge compared to the sports market are absolutely laughable when compared to them in terms of size. I mean, if you can have such inefficiencies in the financial markets, then you certainly have a lot more inefficiencies in sports markets. The question is, can you find it? I mean, most people can't find them, because for most people, even those not quite efficient markets are, I mean, still quite efficient to them. I mean, it's difficult to discover this value, but I would say it's there, and it's not 100% efficient. And one reason to say this and to answer this question this way was, first, I knew that everyone would say it's super efficient, which I think is not the case. And I just want to give a different perspective. But also back in the day, when I was thinking about getting into rating models and handicapping and statistical analysis of sports, I often said, you know, I'll just waste a lot of time and it won't amount to anything because the markets are extremely efficient. And it's just a mantra, you know, markets are extremely efficient. It doesn't make any sense. It doesn't have, I mean, you'll never get anywhere. And this is just not the case. I mean, they're fairly efficient, but there are a lot of places where you can discover some value if you make the effort, if you put the work. And so I do believe that this is the case in sports market and in the financial markets as well.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. And my follow-up question was going to be on that. If markets aren't efficient or betting markets aren't efficient, then what can we rely on? If like, can we rely on anything else in terms of finding the right price?
Yeah, not much really. I mean, betting, it's really what they call a low validity environment. I mean, you have a guy who has made, as you said, 3,000 bets. He has a great ROI and you still cannot be sure if he's doing something right or if he's just lucky. It's really difficult. This is one of the biggest, I mean, this is the great challenge in betting. Being able to really to know if you have a value or not. I mean, you have the closing line value and that's why people like it. I mean, it doesn't tell the whole story, but this is the best we have, really, and we don't have much else at the end of the day. I think it's the markets are not full, are not completely efficient, but they're quite efficient. And going by this, you can use this to kind of to try to understand them better or to understand your betting better.
Yeah, very interesting stuff, mate. And that's all I had for you today. And it's been really great having you on because you've provided some really cool insight. And I like your kind of, I wouldn't say contrary approach to some of the questions we've asked, but just looking at it from a different perspective and not from like a general crowd point of view. So it's been really, really interesting and great having you on today. If people want to look you up or follow your thoughts or your blog or whatever, where can they find you, mate?
Well, first of all, let me say that I really enjoyed talking to you as well. And I'm running a betting blog called Church of Betting, so it's churchofbetting.com. You can check it out, and you can drop me an email or anything if you want to get in contact.
Yeah, cool. Thanks everyone for listening. Make sure you do a quick rate and review of the podcast and subscribe to us wherever you listen to your podcasts. And lastly, if you're looking to implement some of the strategies we talked about today or the strategies we talk about just about on every podcast here, make sure you check out the TradeMate Sports Value Betting software and start a free trial and see if you like it and start your value betting journey. But Nanko, mate, great having you on once again and we'll catch up soon.
Thanks. Have a good day.
Okay. See you guys.